What's up, everybody? This is It Could Be Better. I'm Nate Bargatze, as always, with Laker, Chris Laker.
Yeah, what's up, everybody?
And we have Dan Soder.
Hey!
He was on one.
Yeah, I was on the Wu-Tang episode in the back of Caroline's. I didn't get to get three words
in. Yeah, that's right. Well, you will get more words in now. We're trying a new thing. Giannis is too big for us. Frankie's Cheesecake stuff's starting to take off.
Oh, it's sold. It's sold at finer places throughout New York City, which is, well, two places. And, you know, he's doing well. Everybody loves the cheesecake.
It is fucking unbelievable. It's one of the best cheesecakes I've ever had in my life.
I had it, and I don't even like cheesecake.
I hate cheesecake. It's good cheesecake.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's good. But we got a new concept tonight that we're going to try to do, because we haven't done one in a while. We've all got stuff going on.
Things are in the hopper.
Things are in the hopper. Stuff will be happening. And in August, we'll be able to fully, I guess, come out and say what everybody's doing.
Which is Giannis is gay.
Giannis is gay.
That's why he clings so hard to his liberal opinions.
So, we're just letting you throw in. So, I don't know. Let us know if you like Soder's dimes he's dropping.
Giannis and I will refuse to be friends after this. He's like, yeah, why'd you tell everyone I was gay? I was like, I don't know. I thought it was funny.
But Giannis is gay. So the idea tonight is we all just got done. Me and Dan Soder did shows at Caroline's, and then Laker came and met us, and we have another show at 11 o'clock. It's now 9:30, so we're in my car and we're going to drive around New York. We're picking up another comic. We're not going to name him just in case he falls through. And then we'll just grab another comic. But so this is, you're going to drive around with us tonight in New York. So we're hoping this is going to be good.
Hopefully we don't die either, because you're not making a point.
We're on the streets of New York right now. We're in middle of the city. It just got done raining.
53rd and 8th. If you ever come here, you can come take a picture right by the Duane Reade. We're near Letterman. I saw the horses. If you watch Letterman, Harrison Ford and David Letterman rode horses down the street tonight, and I got a picture of the horses.
There it is.
That's the first.
Hey, this is. I'll just hold it. This is an experiment, you know, the driving around thing. Right now I'm feeling very good about it, though. I think this is going to be the new format of It Could Be Better. We drive around in Nate's car, and then
maybe we go to some bad neighborhoods and see if we get out.
That sounds like Judgment Night.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good movie.
We could do that.
No, that sounds like a terrible idea.
So, let's get into this. I don't know when this will go up, but I'm going to be on Conan Thursday, July 21st.
That's O'Brien, not the remake of the Barbarian movie.
O'Brien. So make sure you watch that. That's what's going on in my life.
Got some nice
hands.
I
got my...
it's on TBS.
TBS.
11 p.m.
I got my charity golf. I'm a celebrity golf tournament. I got that again.
Are you really?
Yeah. I'm a celebrity.
What is that?
Me and Ozzie Smith. Have you heard of him?
Wait, the wizard?
Yeah.
You're on the same bill as Ozzie Smith.
Yes.
As a friend that bothers me.
Me and Ozzie Smith, two years ago when I did my third time, first year I did it, Ozzie didn't come last year. First year I did it, we rode in a bus with Ozzie Smith, and then he talked about how the weather was when he would go play at Shea Stadium. And I talked about how I can see Shea Stadium from my house.
I think our first episode, you talked about the first one.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Wait, he's called, what's he called, the Wizard?
The Wizard.
Wizard of Oz.
Huh.
Wizard of Oz. So, you know, that would be exciting stuff. But let's figure something. We didn't even write what we're gonna talk about.
We're flying by the seat of our pants here. We have no format. We don't have Giannis to guide the show,
does he guide it?
Yeah, actually he does.
I'll
give him that.
He's a shepherd.
Well, he's a big talker.
But he,
he's a great talker.
He steers. That's a thankless job in this kind of thing. Is the guy that steers it. And I usually can just sit back and every once in a while make fun of something somebody says.
So you're in the driver's seat tonight, like?
I don't know.
I think you might be, because Nate's actually literally driving. So you have
literally
to.
Literally in the driver's
seat. Because it's his car, you see.
Yeah.
Literally.
Literally.
It's so, literally his car.
So you have to take over as far as guiding this ship so we don't die.
Is that really
well, let's just say this. If you're in New York City, Ziegfeld Theater, one of the best theaters, huge screen, classic, historic theater, you could go by there and see Friends with Benefits starring Justin Timberlake.
What a great movie. It's not like a similar movie as came out in the previous 2 months.
That's pretty wild, because that movie... Like, that's pretty insane that they just go, yeah, we're just making the movie. Oh, it's a premiere. Maybe, I think Justin Timberlake is here.
No.
Look at all these people.
Oh, my God. We're driving.
That's true.
This is the best thing about this town.
Watch this. Should I get him mad?
What are you going to do?
Come on. Don't heckle the people.
I preferred the Ashton Kutcher movie.
Oh, come on. See, now the cops are just...
Looking at us. We're getting followed.
Ah, good.
All for not a good joke.
That was a decent joke.
If you knew the name of the Ashton Kutcher movie...
No Strings Attached.
Okay, loop around the block.
Let's hit him again.
This is the premiere. We're driving by the premiere. Actually, a little side note. When I got offered Conan, they offered the 20th or the 21st. And I could not do the 20th. I mean, I would have canceled, but they were like, "Oh, just do the 21st. You don't got to cancel anything." So I was like, "All right." And then my 20th date that was supposed to be in Nashville, they canceled. My hometown canceled my show on me.
Ugh.
And come to find out, Justin Timberlake was on that show.
And so you love JT.
I love JT. So
why does everybody love that guy?
He's talented. Dude,
he's very talented.
Very talented.
Very talented.
I'm not saying the guy isn't talented, but I mean...
Does he bother you?
I just don't dig what he does.
Oh, it's good.
He can dance, he can sing, he's got good comedic timing.
Yeah.
Not enough to carry a movie like Friends with Benefits.
I'm not buying that he's funny.
He's a scratch golfer.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Which is big on your respect, because you're a celebrity golfer.
Well, it's insane. Yeah, I'm a celebrity. I mean, you know, you don't know how it is to play with the people watching. No one watches this. No one even knows we're doing it. So... let's talk about the celebrity. We got Dan Soder here. Did we ever talk about your radio days, Dan?
No, I don't think we did.
Dan,
we're actually right near it.
Yes, Dan started doing radio in Arizona.
Yeah, Tucson, Arizona.
You were big time. What was your name?
I was Scared Dan on KFMA 92.1 and 101.3 KFMA.
You can do your...
Tucson's new rock.
Yeah. Scared Dan? Were you scared all the time?
No, what happened was I made an air check tape. If you don't know, in radio, when you're a DJ on a radio station, you do a thing called an air check tape. That's a way for your bosses to check up on how you're doing. So basically when you hit the on button on the mic, it goes to a tape. Then you give the tape to your boss. They listen back to see if you're doing... It's basically, you know, like a progress report. They want to see if you're doing good or not. So my first basically shift on air, my voice cracked the first time I turned on the mic. It was like, you're listening to 92.1 and 101.3 KFMA. And I was so embarrassed that I took the tape out and wrote Scared Dan. And then on the other side of the tape, which is my next shift, I wrote Not So Scared Dan. And my boss liked it enough to call me Scared Dan for the rest of my time in Tucson.
You had some wild stories, right? Like you had,
not that one.
Not that.
No, that one.
I dozed off.
But you think people still know you as Scared Dan? Like if you go back to Arizona,
yeah, they would know me.
You think you could headline? You remember Scared Dan?
I don't think a lot of people would know me, but I think enough people would know me. Like if I went on KFMA and they're like, "Hey, Scared Dan's back. He's gonna be at Laughs." I feel like they would know who I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an, you know.
I mean, it was 5 years ago, but I feel like they'd know.
You had a lot of people listening and.
Yeah, what's weird is I went back
fan base.
When I moved to New York 5 years ago. I went back to work the club and I went in and sat in on a shift with one of my buddies, and someone called in and they're like, "Hey, Scared," like a couple people called in. They're like, "Good to have you back, Scared Dan." And so.
You were like the booker of Tucson, Arizona.
I wasn't really the book. I
just tried to name an obscure radio guy that made it, but that was stupid.
No, Booker. I actually worked with Booker at K-Rock.
Oh, that's right.
In
yeah.
New York.
Yes. Well, that's you have some of my favorite stories with.
You're talking about Don from Tucson?
Yes.
I used to get blowjobs from a fat chick for classic rock CDs.
That's like her standards weren't that high. She like for was classic rock CDs. Like it's not even like tickets or something.
No, but she was a land monster. Like she was literally the grossest person I've ever had sexual activity with in my entire life. Like to the point where she said that her bottom looked like J-Lo when we were on the phone the first time.
Yeah.
And she had the ass of like a 60-year-old Italian grandmother. Like it was gross. Yeah. It wasn't even.
And what? And like, she's one that she call in and goes, "Oh, scared Dan's back."
No, she didn't. Thank God, she never knew my last name. She only knew me as Scared Dan. But
How'd you negotiate this deal? Like, did she blow you and then say, "Well, can I get a CD?"
Yeah.
Or
she like blew me a couple times. And then, like, one time she called and she's like, "You should bring some CDs." And I was like, "Well, what do you like?" And she was like, "I like Anthrax." And I was like, "Ah, all right." So I went next door to the classic rock station and just, like, grabbed a bunch of the free CDs they had. And I literally did, like, a Chinese lady in New York with the DVDs. I was like, "What do you like?"
Yeah.
"Take whatever you like." And she was like, "Oh, I want the Van Halen and Anthrax." And then she blew me behind an AutoZone. So that was kind of.
You peaked.
That's where I peaked. Yeah, that was the highlight of my career. But the grossest thing was she used to call me up, and she had like a sexy voice. So she would call me up and she'd go, "Hey, do you want me to get the wrinkles out?" Like that's what she would always say, and I was like, "Oh," that was like code word for blowjob.
Oh, so she would just drive down there?
No, I would go pick her up.
Yeah.
At her house when I got off my job at the radio station. She had kids, so she'd have
this
to...
This happened a few times.
About a baker's dozen.
All right.
And it's the lowest point of my life. Literally, I went home and washed myself like Ace Ventura.
You know, that was my...
I mean, that's just mean, though. I mean, you got blown. To say that's the low point of your life...
You have Baker, if I showed you what she looked like, you would go home and wash yourself for me telling you this story.
I don't know. I don't think you've seen the places I've been.
Nah, you're right. I'm fucking barking up the wrong tree on that one.
I think they're all fantastic people. I'm sorry,
saint of fucking fellatio. No,
I say a woman that wants to have sex with me or give me oral sex, they're the best people in the world. And I give them the full ride every time. I act like, you know, like, it doesn't matter what they look like, even if the ones that I'm not too happy about.
Now you're full of shit. It doesn't matter what they look like at all.
Well, I mean, everybody's got limits.
Yeah, but there's, exactly.
But you will see me with... I have taken ugly chicks and treated them like fucking princess, and I'll take them and I'll buy eggs. I'm that kind of, you know... Because
so what you're trying to say is that you're actually a gentleman.
I'm a gentleman. Well, I think... You put that out there into the universe.
It's gonna come back.
Then you'll get more mediocre.
It wasn't like I wasn't
pussy.
But I wasn't mean to her.
No, I'm just saying low point.
I gave her CDs.
Yeah,
but it was definitely a low point.
So like you're like a gentleman when you do ungentleman things.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
He wears a top hat when he's fucking a hooker because he's a gentleman.
It's about the show.
Yeah.
Well, it's just, you know, I feel like, you know, that they're nice enough to have sex with me. I'm happy to be nice to them.
So, how long have you been here now, Soder?
5 years.
5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a job. You moved here for K-Rock?
No, I moved here to do comedy. But when I moved here, I had an interview at Sirius, and they couldn't get me a job. So, they referred me to, at the time, what was Free FM. After Stern left K-Rock, they switched.
Howard Stern left K-Rock, went to Sirius.
Yeah, so they switched K-Rock to Free FM, which was a talk radio station. But they were still doing rock music on the weekends.
David Lee Roth in the morning.
Yeah, that failed quickly. Yeah. So they brought in Opie and Anthony, which did well. They had Nick DiPaolo in the afternoons, which was a great show.
Yeah.
And they were still doing like a rock format on the weekends, and they asked me if I was interested in auditioning for a DJ spot on the weekends. Did an audition spot, and they hired me. And 2 months after they hired me, they flipped it back to K-Rock. So I had a job.
Did you do it in Stern's?
Yeah, we started in the side studio, And then after about 6 months, they let us into the Opie and Anthony studio, which was the former Howard Stern studio.
Yeah. It was a cool thing that happened in this car. I did a road gig, and Dan was working. I knew you were working that night. You remember that? And like, yeah. We had, I forget what we said, but we had other guys in the car, so we just had...
You told me to tell someone to shut up over the radio.
Yeah. So we had like, we had 92.3 on, and the guy in the car, we did not tell him, and he didn't know you worked there. Shut up, Pat.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Pat O'Shea. And so he was sitting in the back, and then we cut it on, and then you, and it was perfect because you were texting me like exactly like, all right, I'm about to like be on now. And or like, you know, in between the songs. And then at the end of it, you just go, shut up, Pat. And then he just lost it. Because it was like, I mean, it was the best thing ever. Just because it was like such a crazy thing to be like, yeah, I can do this.
Yeah, I can tell someone on the radio.
We can set this up on the radio. I know a guy that's on this radio. It was like a wild.
Because I remember you were pretty gassed up. And you're like, can you please just tell Pat O'Shea to shut up on the radio?
Yeah.
And yeah, I remember. I did that. I only did that a couple times. I did that once with you, and then for Big Jay Okerson, he was in the car with his daughter.
Yeah.
And he had me say hello to her, to Isabella.
Oh.
On the radio. I think she was young enough to where that was still impressive.
She was like, she was in your car at 2 a.m. Like, yeah. Didn't you just do night shifts?
No, I used to do afternoon. I used to do like afternoons on Sundays from 4 to 8.
Oh, that's awesome, though.
Yeah, so it was a great job. I mean, I literally was on air in New York at a radio station that I loved, that, you know, I used to listen to on syndication when Stern was. And then they fired me and everybody I worked with because they decided that they didn't want to do rock. They wanted to be, yeah, your kind of music, yeah. Your bowling alley music, Nate.
And I was happy.
Yeah, I know. You'll love it.
Yeah.
I get mad. I literally get mad at you when you listen to fucking 92.3.
Why could they not keep you on as a DJ and you just
because
go to that music?
Listen to my voice. I sound like I've ridden a hard life, and they want like peppy young people to be like, "Hey, it's Lady Gaga." Like, they don't want me being like, "Oh, you want to listen to some Stone Temple Pilots?"
You know. Are you happy? But you know, would you still be there? You think?
I don't know. Because the good thing was is that, you know, being fired from that job, it made me kind of hustle more in comedy.
Yeah.
So I feel like...
you worked a lot of midnights.
Yeah, I would work nights, so the only spots I could do at comedy clubs would be early, like, 8 p.m. shows. Like, I couldn't do a 10 p.m. show or a midnight show.
And you'd go in all... You'd go in gassed up.
Oh, yeah, I used to get fucking boozed up. The best was New Year's Eve, I want to say, 08 going into 09, right before I lost my job. I didn't lose it for drinking, by the way. But I was doing a spot at Stand Up New York, and the bartender gave me a bag full of Budweiser's and a half a bottle of Jack Daniels.
Jeez.
And I just went into the studio and just drank all of it. And greatest shift of my life.
And how, from 12 to what, 6?
5 a.m.
Oh, 5 a.m.
Yeah, so like when I left, the party was still going on. So it was kind of like I just got paid for partying. And I had like friends in the studio.
Yeah.
Like I'd bring people up and we'd drink beers and, you know, bullshit, watch the TV. So.
And they don't even like, you know, you just got every now and again go, hey, you listen to 92.3.
Yeah, just like literally six times an hour. I'd have to get on the mic and be like, hey, you're listening to 92.3 or 92.3 K-Rock.
Did you ever almost forget?
One of my first shifts, I said 92.1 KFMA.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. They were
find out?
Yeah. My boss was in the studio when I did it. I mean, they just wrote it off to nerves. But.
But truly, you were trying to.
Like, I literally. I mean, you say a station for 5 years.
Yeah.
You're going to slip up.
What was your.
Oh wait, Nate's on the phone with the next guest.
All right, we paused because we had Dan take a phone call. What were you saying? Oh, the slip up. Did you have a name on the air? Were you scared, Dan?
No, I just went by my last name. I just went by Soder.
That's a good radio name.
You're rocking out with the Soder.
Yeah.
So dope.
Hey, don't forget, we're getting the lead out. double shots of Led Zeppelin all afternoon. It's the Sode Pop. No, I actually was just talk normal, and hope it went well.
You should have hand. If you would have done it in that real radio voice, though,
what would have been my name?
Is that what you have to do?
Like, what do you mean?
Like it, like you know, like when you listen to like 92.3 now, like do they have to talk like that?
I know because I know a couple of the staff members. They're wiggers.
Yeah.
Like they like now it's kind of like an urban station. So like, yo, what's up, y'all? Yo, we got that new Chris Brown coming up. But then they get off air and they're like, hey, so it's nice to meet you. Okay, so we're gonna go on air in about 10 minutes. And are you ready to go? Yeah. What's up? You hanging out with your boy D Loke? Yeah, we got that new. You know what I'm saying? That Rihanna track. It's blazing. It's blazing hot. Blazing hot. All right, 92.3 now. They get off air and they're like, hey, so do you mind? Excuse me, Kenny the intern, can you give me some more coffee? It sucks. It's all fake.
Is why did you choose Chris Brown and then Rihanna?
Because they fought each other, and I thought that Rihanna could win the matchup. Have you seen her? Her shoulders are jacked.
She is big.
Yeah, she's sexy as shit.
So did you get any blowjobs out of the K-Rock?
I had a girlfriend the whole time, but my girlfriend and I did have sex in the bathroom that Howard Stern built for himself. Because if people don't know, Howard Stern is a renowned germaphobe. So he made CBS build him his own bathroom so that he could go to the bathroom during the show. And my ex-girlfriend and I had sex in that bathroom.
Oh, that's fun.
With condoms, though. So we were safe.
So if he came back?
If he came back, he wouldn't freak out. Because he'd be like, dude, I wrapped it up and we washed our hands.
Yeah.
So.
All right, let's take a quick pause.
Break. We're going to pick up Joe DeRosa, everybody. Fun stuff. He's got stuff coming out. So, All right.
We're back,
everybody. We picked up a much more successful comedian.
Ouch.
Dan Soder's still in the car, though.
Ouch.
We got Joe DeRosa.
Hey, Joe. Guys.
Hey.
What's everybody. Happening? I wanted to request, can we let Dan out now?
Yeah, can you lean forward? Because no one can hear you. Your dumb, soft-pitched voice.
Sorry, Dan. I forgot this is one of your credits.
Yeah. We're just talking about.
We're talking about Dan's 92.3 K-Rock credit.
I used to love that credit. All he would do was sit in the thing and make sure that the songs were playing.
I would talk 6 times an hour.
He used it as a credit.
Goddamn right, I did. It was a local personality. Back in the 80s, I could have opened a car dealership.
Yeah, well, hey.
Oh, in Tucson.
Yeah, goddamn right.
Yeah, with Scared Dan.
Scared Dan could open up.
You still can't buy a drink in Tucson. Wait, we're done.
Who's Scared Dan?
That was my name in Tucson when I worked on the radio.
Why?
I told the story.
It's as uninteresting as us blowing over the story. Okay. It's the exact same thrill.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, we got Joe DeRosa here. Obviously, we already said I've known Joe for a long time. For, I don't know, 6 years. I've been here 7 years. Basically, the entire time I've been here.
Yeah, I haven't been here much longer than you. I think I've been here about 8 years. So
yes,
it was right after
we met at the Boston.
Yes,
and you were big time.
Oh, was
and
I?
Now you're enormous. Now you're moving. You're director, right?
I directed a short film that Bobby Kelly and Bill Burr and myself wrote called Cheat.
Oh.
And
some people listening there. That's going to buy it.
It's playing around at some festivals and things, so I'm excited about that.
You started in Philly, though, right?
Yeah, I started in Philly at a predominantly black club called The Laugh House on South Street. For those of you that don't know Philly, South Street is sort of their hate street or whatever, like San Francisco, where there's a lot of record stores and shops and, you know, clothing stores and shit like that. So there was a club there called the Laugh House that has actually been several different clubs over the years. But when I started, it was the Laugh House, and it was predominantly a black club. It was right after, you know, Def Jam, the first run of Def Jam had ended. And that was the main type of comedian that played there was
so not you.
Yeah, exactly. Me and Mike Vecchione,
But that's where you honed your woman bee shopping bit, right?
Yes, yeah, that's where I did that, and that's where I wrote all my jokes about Ludacris.
I love that chunk. Why don't you do that anymore?
They don't work as well in the downtown room.
Oh, damn it.
And the great thing about South Street is, too, white people during the day, black people at night.
Yes.
It's a whole shift change.
it is a shift change. Some of those people you're referring to were my first hecklers.
The white people?
No, the black people.
Oh, damn.
But you know what, man? It was a great place to start because when you're... Jay Oakerson started there before me, and Kurt Metzger started there, and we've all discussed this several times. It's like when you start in a club like that, it's like there's two roads to travel. You can either be... Now, if you're a white guy from the city, it's a whole different story, but we were all white guys from the suburbs. So if you're a white guy from the suburbs starting in a club like that, there are two roads to go down. You can either go down the road of like, hey, I'm the cheesy white guy that tries to relate to the city culture and blah, 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 blah. Or you can just be yourself and get punched in the face, metaphorically, on stage until you learn how to say to an audience that you're not really a part of, like, hey, man, this is me. And I do also want to clarify that I'm not saying that every black audience is, like, a city-type audience, but, like, this club was that. It was a very, like, hip-hop, city, urban kind of room. So it was actually really great, man. Like, you get knocked around a bit on stage, and then when you kind of get your balls and learn how to handle it, it's a fucking blast. You know?
Well, y'all had two that like Kevin Hart came out of there, right?
Yeah, oh
like,
yeah.
Was he big? Because I'm sure everybody knows Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart's like pretty famous now.
He's got a movie coming.
Yeah.
Several. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody's got like an actual stand up concert.
Yeah.
Movie.
Oh, that. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Where he goes to the Laugh House. I think they show your headshot.
Is he the guy? Is he the guy out of that like kind of really like? I mean, did y'all start somewhat the same, or is he a couple years ahead of y'all?
Kevin started, I think, 2 or 3 years before me. He started with Jay and Kurt. But everybody knew, you know, a really funny comic named Touré Gordon who mentored me and mentored a bunch of us and who's still one of my closest friends. You know, he told me all about Kevin when I started out, and I didn't know who Kevin was. I didn't even know what he looked like. He was just like this, like, it was like the Lone Ranger or something. There was like this legend of Kevin Hart in the Philly scene of like this guy that started and then like 3 years later had a sitcom or something like that. Like, he shot up the ladder so fast.
I hate to break your moment down memory lane, but Nate just ran a red light.
The light was stuck on yellow and everybody was running it.
No, it was on red when you went through.
No, I know, because it's stuck. Look at the middle, the light going back. It's stuck on yellow. You can see the yellow right there.
Yellow one more time?
Watch those people
just
back there.
Just say yellow. Just say yellow one more time.
It looks like everybody back there is running it.
Is it yellow?
All right.
Back to Kevin Hart's Behind the Music.
Quit trying to expose Nate's gimmick. You know, what you want him to do. You want him to start talking like you?
If he had some diction, I would love it.
Then how's he going to get on Conan?
Huh? Nate does say yellow like he's dueling you in the Old West.
What are you, yellow McFly? Back to the Future 3.
Hey, fucking Tannen. old West. The fuck was Tannen's name in that movie?
That was Bulldog.
Bulldog Tannen.
Mad Dog.
Mad Dog Tannen.
Mad Dog Tannen. Mad Dog Bargatze. What are you, yellow for not running that light?
Anyway,
so back to Kevin Hart blowing up.
Yeah, he never stopped. He was just one of those guys who just like shot out of the cannon full speed and never stopped. I remember one night, it was like one of my first lessons in like the hierarchy of stand-up. The Laugh House used to do a thing on Thursday nights when you were an up-and-coming guy, they would pay you to headline on Thursday and do like 30 minutes or something like that when you're a younger guy trying to just figure your shit out. And it was like the second time I ever did it. You know, I'm like 2 years in. I think I'm a king shit because I'm closing the Thursday night show with like 30 minutes or whatever the fuck I was doing. And I was like 15 minutes in and I got lit. I was killing. I was 15 minutes in, I got lit. And I was like, what the fuck? Why did they like me, you know? And I got off stage and Kevin was there. And they were like, sorry, dude, Kevin's got it. He's going on.
Yeah.
Kevin will be doing the remainder of time we can spare on this show.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's how this works. Now I get it, you know. But
how much harder did he kill than you?
He killed pretty fucking hard.
And if you, I remember if you see him now, is he cool to you?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, he's a super nice guy. I remember, like, when I met him that night, he only knew me from Jay.
Yeah.
And I remember he, like, when I got off stage, he was like, you're funny motherfucker, Joe. You know, yeah. And it, like, meant so much to me that yeah. a guy that had credits that said I was funny or whatever, you know? So, like, he's always been really, really, really nice, man. He's a good dude. He's a really good dude.
Touré's been down there for, I went to Montreal with Touré, and I'm a big fan of Touré.
I love Touré. He's yeah. one of my favorite guys in the world. Yeah. One of the funniest dudes I know, and talk about a guy that's fun to hang out and throw a few back with. Jesus
Christ. I did a show with him and Richie Redding outside of Philly, and the second I learned Touré was on it, I just, my eyes lit up because I knew I was going to get gassed up that night just hanging out with Touré. I was like, oh, this is going to turn serious.
Oh, he's a blast. I remember we used to have the same manager, and we went over our manager's house for the Super Bowl, I think it was. And I brought a bottle of whiskey of Jack Daniels with me, and I showed up, and Touré was there, and I was like, oh, man, we're getting fucking hammered. I think I drank the whole bottle.
By yourself.
Of whiskey, almost by myself, yeah. And, I remember being passed out on the couch and him being like, get up, bitch.
He doesn't...
Let's do
he
a just, shot, bitch.
He doesn't have like, an off
Jesus
switch.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
He, we drank in Philly, and then, he had someone take me to go get a cheesesteak because he had a spot at the Laugh House. And I remember being so drunk in the Laugh House, I couldn't say Corona. They're like, what do you want? And I was like, ugh. God. Touré's like, ah, my man wants a Corona. I was like, oh, thank you, Touré.
We are now passing the famed Rodney Dangerfield's club, Dangerfield. Does anybody play there?
I'm telling you, the crowds have no respect.
I used to. I used to get some spots there, and that's slowed down.
That is slowed down. I've actually never gotten in there. But I like to drive by and look at it.
It's old school, man.
It is like Dangerfield, you go in there, it's I think there's a guy that's been there since it opened.
Yeah, it's a time.
Yeah, that guy Tony has been there for the whole time.
It's a time capsule, man.
Yeah.
That guy's got stories about seeing Andy Kaufman on like New Talent Night.
That's crazy.
Like insane. He's got stories about when Dice Clay recorded The Day the Laughter Died in there.
Really?
And how how Dice was, which if anybody listening doesn't know that album, Dice Clay, right after he broke with his very first special, the fucking Nursery Rhymes, that whole thing, and he was huge. His follow-up album was this double album called The Day the Laughter Died. It was a concept album where he wanted to go on stage with no material prepared and essentially sort of try to bomb, I guess. And he told Tony at Dangerfield, he goes, look, we're coming in on Thursday to do this. If there's more than 30 people here, I'm not doing it. It's got to be small.
So he wanted a dead audience.
Yeah, he wanted it to be really small and intimate and quiet. And he recorded there for 2 nights. And it's like one of the... It's in my top 5 comedy albums ever. It's one of the funniest things I've ever heard. And, dude, it had to... That album had to grow on me the way, like, hearing, like jazz music or opera has to grow on you. You're like, hey, what is this? What the fuck is he... What is this? And then the third time you hear it, you're like, oh, man, this is... Now I get it.
Yeah, because you get the whole concept of what it's supposed to be.
But Jesus Christ, man, that album is fucking... Woo! You guys know that record?
No, I didn't know that.
I've never heard it. I always hear it's great, and then, like, I've never listened to it.
Download it, man. It's on iTunes. Do yourself a favor.
That'd be pretty awesome. I didn't even know. It makes me like him just to know he did that.
Dude, it literally sounds like... The best description of it is if Andrew Dice Clay did an alternative comedy show, how he would do it. And he does shit on it. It gets weirder and weirder as it goes. And he does shit by the end of it where you're like... He does a whole bit where he's like, you don't know what the fuck you're even laughing at right now. And you don't. I'm like, I don't even understand what he's talking. It's gibberish. And it's still hilarious. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's called Hour Back is the name of the bit. It's you gotta check that album out. It'll teach you a thing or two.
It's weird to see too, because I mean, like, especially I bet it was like to hear it back then to be like he just did, you know, Madison Square Garden, like all this stuff. And then for him to like do that.
It was right before Madison Square Garden. It's the album before Dice Rules.
Oh, okay.
So he was coming up. He blew, he had blown up and he was coming up, but he wasn't at his peak yet.
Yeah.
But he's like, it would sort of be like, it would be like, he was like Chappelle during first season of Chappelle's Show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was like, it was just fucking wild, man. Or like Chris Rock, you know, after the first special, but before Bigger and Blacker, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was fucking crazy, man. I mean, and hearing that, I was 12 when I got that album. I didn't understand it at all.
See, and I listened to The Dice Man Cometh when I was like 11.
Yeah, the first one.
Yeah, and then that blew me away to the point where I thought, I was like, oh, this guy's
wait,
the best.
Wait, hold on. Oh, wait, you just listened to it when it was 11? All right, never mind. I thought I caught you in a soda, like his,
a soda fact?
He said 12. And then you said, I saw an 11. But
no, I saw it when I was
11. But I thought you meant like it was coming out.
So you're trying to explain what a Soder fact is?
Yeah, Soder will make up, he just makes up stuff.
I make up numbers. Coffee. It's not stuff, I make up numbers. If you think you can give me a fact or something that might sound right. By the way, we're driving by my ex-girlfriend's parents' place right now.
Oh, huh.
Well, they're rich.
Yeah.
We're driving by a place called the Toy Zone.
Yeah, no, they live, Toy Zone's right there. My ex-girlfriend's parents live right on the corner of 86th and Park.
Oh, we're on 86th and Park.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Here we are.
Woody Allen lives two blocks up.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, he lives right on Park Avenue.
Dude, he lives down here on the east side?
Yeah.
I thought he was an Upper West guy.
Nah, I think he's Joe List, which this isn't a Soder fact. Joe List has told me that he lives in this neighborhood.
Oh, you guys want to hear a great New York story?
Yeah. Sure we do.
All right, so yesterday, I'm walking through my neighborhood, and I'm stressing out about all the shit New York stresses you out about, like money, rent, work, and I'm literally so, I just got out of this cab because he went the wrong way, and now I gotta walk like 8 blocks in the fucking heat because this guy took us into all the wrong way, and I'm like, God damn it. And I'm stressed. I'm like, why did I take that fucking cab? It was a waste of money. God damn it. And I'm so angry, dude. And I'm literally mumbling to myself. Mumbling profanities to myself. Because I'm so worked up. And I come around the corner. And as I'm coming around the corner of this building, I literally almost run into Al Pacino.
What?
Yeah. I come around and I'm like, I almost bump into this guy. And I move at the last second. And this was my thing. It was like, oh, there's a guy. Move over. That guy looks a little crazy. Holy shit, that's Al Pacino.
He's a little fella, right?
Dude, he's little, and he was all hunched over, and he has hair in one of those fucking hair bands that he wears.
Yeah.
And a sport coat on in this fucking 90-degree heat. Mm-hmm. And he's just fucking doing this with his hands, and he's just going, ah, that's what I'm saying. He's talking to this lady, and I was like, and you can tell the lady was just like a normal lady that he's friends with, and I was like, fuck! It was fucking Al Pacino.
I had a Saturday night. Nate and I were at Eastville on the Late Show. Rough crowd.
Yeah.
Probably one of the worst crowds I've ever performed in front of. They were just dead silent. I eat my shit, and I'm going to meet up with one of my friends. Nate's on stage. I'm finishing my beer, and Eastville's kind of like in a basement, so you have to run up the stairs. I run up the stairs. Marissa Tomei. Right at the bottom of the stairs of KGB Bar.
Oh, really?
Just standing there. Tiny.
Dude.
Attractive.
How hot is she? I've seen her in real life. She's so hot.
It's incredibly attractive.
Yeah. Yeah, I went to, there's like this secret bar in my neighborhood. I shouldn't be talking about, did I say where I live already? I don't want to say it on the thing. But, not that anybody gives a shit, but I just feel like it's not a good habit.
Yeah, they're probably listening. The bartender, the owner of the joint's probably listening.
Yeah, I don't think you said it on.
But anyway, there's a bar in my neighborhood where a lot of actors hang out, and I got in because my buddy Bill Dawes was in a Broadway show. And he was like, "We're gonna take you to the Actor Bar."
Yeah.
And he brought me to this bar, and it was like, Marissa Tomei was like sitting across from us.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, it was so hard not to, like, keep looking at her. Not because it was, oh, that's Marissa Tomei, because I was like, man, she's so pretty, man.
Yeah, I stopped and smoked a cigarette and then talked to Jimmy, the bouncer of KGB Bar, for 20 minutes about nothing.
Was she smoking?
Ah, she was, the guy she was with was smoking.
Was the guy she was with a stud?
Yeah, he was like a younger Spanish-looking dude.
Younger Spanish-looking dudes.
Probably just banging the bejesus out of her.
I saw Susan Sarandon.
Yeah?
Stand outside once, but she looked kind of, because she's like 60.
Yeah.
But she was wearing like hipstery stuff with like a young, which could have been her son, I guess.
Her son is friends with my ex-girlfriend.
Dude,
so
I saw her
23.
I saw her 10 years ago on Lafayette on a Razor scooter.
What?
Really?
She was on a Razor scooter, and I know it was her. I posit it was her, because I was working on a movie at the time, and I was talking to the producers, like, no, she's out of town. And then he actually had a meeting with her and said she came up on a Razor scooter. And it was, so it was definitely her. She used to ride around on a Razor scooter.
Big titties.
Oh, beautiful.
Huge. Yeah. I would have sex with her.
Oh, yeah. They're probably all soft now. She's divorced from Tim Robbins.
I wonder if Tim Robbins is cleaning up now.
Oh, he's probably. Dude, he's nailing down everything. You got to remember, he married an older lady.
Hey, why don't we remember that we're doing a podcast and y'all don't...
Yeah, but isn't this the point of the podcast? You want us to get real?
I like it getting real, but then y'all start trailing off. Y'all both lean back and go, I wonder what's going on here later.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing.
I don't.
Where are you driving, Nate?
We're just driving.
We're going through the park now.
Going through Central Park now.
Central Park. You're going on a little audio tour of New York City, but we're not really... every once in a while, we just acknowledge where we are.
We could go pick up a tour guide in Dan Shackey, though, and he could give us... if we did a video.
As much as I'd love to have another guy in this car.
No, we're not picking up. So, you're directing. You got your movie coming out. You directed it, right?
Yeah, I directed it, and the three of us wrote it.
That's pretty big. You got to, you know... This is your first movie directing, right? You've never done anything small or like...
Well, it was a short film. It wasn't a feature, so, but you know, technically that's small, right?
I mean, but not. This isn't really small because you got Bill Burr, you, and Bobby Kelly. So it's like pretty big names. So it's not like a student, you know.
Right. Oh, I got what you're saying. I'm sorry. I thought you meant like the
it's a small thing, but yeah. I mean, like... So you're going to Montreal and stuff. You can say all that, right? Like,
yeah. We premiered at Tribeca, which was a real honor.
That's pretty wild. Did you see, everybody had to be there for that, right?
I was at a luncheon with De Niro. That was pretty fucking crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was fun, man. So I went to Tribeca, premiered there. That was great. And, you know, Colin Quinn's in the movie and Rich Voss and Bonnie McFarlane, a lot of people that we really respect and love were in it, so that was cool. To answer your question, no, that was the first thing I ever directed. I always wanted to direct and never thought it was possible. Just didn't understand how you went about doing it. And then the three, Bobby and Billy and I, decided we were going to write this movie. And literally, as we were like putting everything together at the almost last minute, I said, "Can I direct this?"
So that's how it came up. Because
that's what I want to do. And they said, yeah, they were very gracious, but there was that moment where they're like, dude, we know you want to do that, but Jesus, do you know what you're doing? And I was like, trust me, I think I know what to do, and I think it'll be good, and the DP's great, and it's going to look great, and whatever. And they were gracious enough to say okay, and they let me do it, and tremendous experience. We had a blast. Most fun I've ever had shooting anything. I mean, dude, we shot in my apartment building one day. And the day we shot in my building, it was me, Bobby, Bill, Rich Voss, Bonnie McFarlane, and Colin Quinn hanging out in my building the whole day for like 8-9 hours shooting. And I just had this moment, not to get cheesy or sentimental or maudlin, but I did have this moment where I looked up and looked at all of them, and I was like, I used to watch these guys on Tough Crowd. Like, yeah. I didn't know any of them at all. Like, and now... they're all my friends, like, and they're here, and we're shooting this thing together as friends, and, like, it really was, you know, probably the almost teariest moment I've ever had in comedy. Like, it was just, you know, I grew up watching Colin Quinn, you know? He walks through the door, all right, boy, I'm here to shoot your movie, what do you want to do? You know, like, you're like, it's just like, it was fucking crazy, man, so...
How do you get the... did y'all just pay to put up the money and all that stuff? And like, or is it like y'all just you shoot it right, and then you just hope, and then you got to just hope someone.
We had a fourth partner in it named Lou Wallach, who was an executive of in the development department over at Comedy Central, and after he had finished up over there, we talked to him, and he liked the script a lot. He had originally read the script when he was over there, and he really liked it, and he came on as one of the executive producers and investors in the film, and we all just threw money into it, and we made it, and that that's was great. It was just like,
and that's how you make a movie, folks. Yeah. That's how.
Do you feel like that's the next kind of frontier of entertainment, is people putting up their own money and then getting it picked up, as opposed to waiting around for someone else to green light, you know, one of your scripts? Like, after you did this, were you like, oh, this is the way to go, like, we need to pony up our own
instead
money
of writing your script and just being, yeah, like, here, you shoot it and go.
Well, you know, I mean, there's so many different philosophies and strategies with something like that, you know. You know, that in that circumstance with us, that helped us to just go, fuck it, let's just write it and let's just do it. And it all worked out because it went to Tribeca, and now it's going to Montreal, and it was a really cool thing. You know, that being said, I just pitched movie ideas to my representatives now, and I said, these are feature length ideas, and I'd like to try to get option to write one of these scripts or whatever. And you know, they were like, look, these are really cool ideas, but they're super indie, like, you're not going to sell one of these, you're going to have to just write it,
yeah,
and then see what happens, you know. But then there are other ideas. I've heard stories of guys going into a room and going, unknown guys literally going into a room and just going, like, it's about a fucking guy, and he was a time machine, and then his dinosaur ends up being his dad by accident. You know what I mean? And they go, okay.
And that's how the remake of the Planet of the Apes works.
Yeah. So there are guys that sell shit like that, you know, and they're, you know, and TV is different too. A lot of the time with TV, it's just like, you can sell it with a good treatment and good character breakdown and some good episode ideas. And they'll at least say, not at least, but, you know, some, if they buy it, they'll at least say, hey, we'll write the script now. You know, but movies, it's different, man. A lot of times in movies, it seems like you have to have a fucking script, which is bitch. It's a lot to write.
What's, man, the, like the goal with it? Like, is you want this to be a feature film, like a big time? Is that the goal, or is it like...
Yeah, we have a feature idea based on the short. We would like to shoot the feature.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be great, you know?
And the movie's called Cheat, right?
Yes.
Can you say what it's about, or...?
Not really, because it kind of gives away... It's only a short. There's not a lot to tell before it starts giving away all the twists.
Can people watch it, or what? Are they going to, you just, eventually?
Right now, they can't. I don't know when this is going to post, but we'll be at the Montreal Comedy Festival doing, we'll have a screening up there for that week.
Are you in Chicago,
the last
too,
week
right?
of July. It's screened in Chicago in June. It's going to screen in Montreal in July. We'll have a screening while we're there.
Are you going to do the thing where, like, you're the director and you take questions? Like, what's the low-level lighting like on that last shot? Just going to be sitting over there with this dumb director's chair, like, oh, well, I was feeling more of a green light, but...
We got to do that at Tribeca, and it was much fun because, you know, it's a short, so they screened it in a series with seven other short films, and all the short films were great, and we really made friends with everybody, all the other young filmmakers and stuff, which was an awesome experience, and, but they brought the directors and producers up after the screenings to answer questions. And it was just so funny because, like, I remember the first screening, Billy and Bobby couldn't be there, and I was there. And they brought us all up, and they said, this is a question for everybody. What inspired you to make this film? And they just passed the mic down. And I think ended up being last or second to last. And everybody was like, you know, I just wanted to make something about, like, the solitude of New York, and even though you're surrounded by people, you're really alone, and I wanted to make something about the relationship that my father and I had, you know, and it was, like, all this weighty shit, and then they got to me, and I was just like, our movie has no message whatsoever. It was just us trying to be funny.
Yeah.
it'd be dicks a little bit, and we just wanted to have a good time. Like,
but isn't that kind of? I like that. Like,
no,
that
it killed. It would. That was what was so much fun.
Like,
it was like,
I don't want to see a guy being like, oh, I watched a sunset with my grandmother with multiple sclerosis, and then I wrote this screenplay. Like, I like you'd be like, hey, I wanted to bang abroad, and I wrote this script. Like, I think
it was fun. Dude, I'm telling you something, like, and I'm sure you guys have, like, experienced this too, but, like, tell me if I'm wrong. You don't realize how skilled you are as a comic until you get to do something where you're not surrounded by comics and there's an audience at it. Like, the first time, like, when you start doing, like, a news panel show or a Q&A at something where everybody else isn't a comedian.
Yeah.
Or some radio thing where they're not, whatever. It's like, those are the times when I realized, like, Jesus Christ, like, I am a comedian. Like, I know how to be funny.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The rest of the time, I think I'm a pile of shit.
Well, you are. You know, you're an absolute pile of
shit. And I watch you guys, and I'm like, I suck. My ex stinks.
I used to say
what
that because it's
doing?
When you watch Soda?
Go fuck yourself. I just gave you a compliment, you dirty, greasy head motherfucker. I just gave you a compliment.
Oh, no. Soda, I'm just joking. I love your Russian accent.
Ah, I hate you and your stumbling.
But
Colin Quinn's already done it, Laker.
do you know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
Well, you know what it is? You're outside of your element, and you're not around people with the same skill set as you.
Dude, it's like when you talk to a girl who's not a comic, and you're like on your fucking game, like, and like all of a sudden you're really making her laugh, and you're like, oh yeah, like I know how to be funny if I have to be. Yeah. You know what I mean?
For profit.
Yeah,
I know how to be.
It's
funny.
It's a fucking great funny. Or a great, great revelation or whatever, and then I go on stage and eat my balls.
What's the worst bomb you had at the Laugh House?
The worst bomb? I mean, do you have anything in like any crazy?
No, but I want to know.
Laugh House?
Yeah, the Laugh House. Because you're looking at a black room, and Joe does basically. You know, I love Joe's comedy, but he's very. I don't. Can black people can relate to you, but I'm imagining it can go awry.
No, dude, once I figured out to not be, like, a pussy and just be confident, I did really well. And they, like, that audience, and again, I'm saying, like, if you're talking about, like, an urban black audience, whatever, you know what I mean? It's this kind of vibe where, like, they love brutal honesty, and they love a good shit talk.
Okay.
So if you trash somebody, they fucking love it, dude. They love it. And if you're brutally honest, it's awesome. Now, there's like the bad brutal honesty, where if you're like, yeah, I got a small dick, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They go, oh, Jesus Christ.
Come on, motherfucker. Yeah.
You got to know how to sell it, but it's like, dude, I remember when I was like a younger comedian, I mean, now whatever, like, I remember doing like black rooms and trying to do religion jokes. I remember Kenny Williams, black comic, said the funniest fucking thing ever to me. I was doing a set in a room with him, and I was doing really well, and then I started bombing. I was in Bed-Stuy, and I started bombing because I did a Jesus joke. And I got off stage, and he goes, God damn, Joe, you can't make fun of Jesus. That's all we got left. Right? And I was like, all right, maybe it's off limits. But then when I learned how to, like, carry myself.
That it was easier?
I would do religion jokes at the Laugh House, and they would kill. Because I'd be like, how many of you are fucking sick and tired of... Because they get it. They're like, yeah, we think it's bullshit, too. We're putting our money in the fucking basket every week. It's stupid. You know? Like, it's all relatable shit. Hey, I'm broke. Yeah, we're broke. Cool. Hey, how many people think this guy's an idiot? All of us. Great. We're on the same page. Who likes fucking? Good? Me, too. You know what I mean? It's not that different. I mean, think about it. If you met... I thought Chris was giving me the wrap it up, that I was going to some dangerous place.
No, please. Talk all you want about the blacks. They don't listen.
I'm not a big fan base. Since Nate is the flagship of this, I'm pretty sure he doesn't have a lot of urban listeners.
Well, think about it like this, though. If you met a black dude that had, like, a hip-hop swagger to him, which I'm sure you know guys like that and you're friends with them.
Two.
You make those dudes laugh, and they make you laugh. It's like, it's not like... You're a white guy. What the fuck? It's like it's being relatable.
Yeah.
It's just talking in a way that people can relate to. You know what I mean? Like, if that makes sense. It's.
Do you still do rooms like that now?
Yeah, I'll do them. Yeah, I don't do them as often as I used to, but I still do them, man. you know, a guy named Talent, who was a big radio guy in the city and a comic here and everything, you know, he still once in a while put me on one of his shows, and I still do some stuff for Touray. Touray's still got a room or two down in, or show or two down in Philly. I'll go down and do those, and you know, it's always fun, man. It's always really fun.
All right, we're gonna have to stop it because their battery's about to die.
Yeah,
and I don't want to lose it, so I'm gonna save it. But that's a weird way to stop, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
yeah,
the
why
war-
don't you do
yeah.
a professional because I'm, sign off.
I know because we because if this cuts off, then it's gonna erase the entire thing. And we're like we're in that weird moment of it might cut off.
Well, as you're talking, you could have just done a sign off.
Well, now I'd like to make a point.
Yeah.
So, all right, this was our. A new version of it could be better. In a car, did you like it, Joe?
Yeah.
Schroeder?
I had a blast.
We had fun. Maybe we should all four-star a podcast.
Huh?
Huh? All of us?
It's called Maybe It Could Be Better.
Maybe It Could Be Better. All right.
Giannis
here. Here, grab that.
All
right, everybody. We're going to stop. Thanks for listening. Go look up. You got your JoeDeRosa.com.
Joe DeRosa Comedy.
Joe DeRosa Comedy. The exact same name as the referee for all the...
NBA ref.
The NBA ref.
I've heard that one before.
JoeDeRosaComedy.com. Soder, do you have your website up?
Not yet. That'll be
that's
about
good.
3 weeks.
I bet it
that's
will.
That's good timing.
That's good timing. That's when this will post,
wait,
so...
wait till 2 weeks after something important.
Something important.
Okay, well...
And Conan on Thursday.
Conan on Thursday. All right, everybody. I'm just going to... I don't have time to do a thing, so we'll just...
Yeah.
All right. See you guys later.